This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer back in the basement. No pancakes. Hoping Dave Dorn's going to show up, but I don't think that's happening. Mr. Durham is up in Pittsburgh, PA. Wes, how are we doing?
I'm great, Pack. It's good to be with you. And we had a great time in Raleigh yesterday. Thanks to the Wolfpack for all the hospitality. And on the Pittsburgh with the roadshow for me. And then the Huddle guys are headed back to Bristol for tonight's episode as well. So, you know, we got a lot of moving parts here on ACC Network, but it's all good, especially after last night at Carter Finley Stadium. Boy, did the Wolfpack look the part in game one, Mark.
Everything that Dave Dorn told us yesterday morning that he would like to see, I'm not sure there's a box that was unchecked. I mean, won the turnover battle, played a clean game, only three penalties, dominated the line of scrimmage, good balance, Leary was good, ran the football, couple 100-yard rushers, yeah. Defense pitches a shutout. I mean, it was almost like the perfect checklist of an opener. You hope everybody gets through it without any injuries. And now you get ready for Mississippi State next week, which will be a really good test for everybody.
Didn't you think, though, that as I was watching the ball game last night, two things came to mind. Number one, that term that we've used with NC State so much, competitive depth. And then the second thing was this. We saw a lot of moving parts in the offense last night. But here's the other thing we saw. We saw NC State shut out an FBS opponent for the first time since 1991. And in doing so, they showed you a lot of flex. Now, we don't know where Jeff Scott's taking South Florida in year two, but I'd say that's a pretty good night for the Wolfpack defense of Tony Gibson, Mark.
Anytime you can shut somebody out, I don't care who you're playing, your defense got the job done. When at the end of the night, after 60 minutes, if you've got a zero, that's a W. That's a W. I mean, if you don't score, you can't win. So, yeah, the defense took care of business. I don't know how good South Florida is, but that doesn't matter. NC State is this team that's sitting on the fringe of the top 25. I still think they're a top 25 team. Said it before the season. I'll say it again. Not that South Florida is a standard. But you know what? Here's what good teams do to teams that aren't very good. You dominate them. And that's exactly what happened to Carter Finley last night. That was total domination.
Yeah, I look, I think that what you see defensively is one thing. The Ricky Person, we all expected a Zonovan Knight show, and Ricky Person stepped up first, right? Then Knight followed in behind him. Then Leary settled in the pass game. Then it was Jordan Houston late. But we saw all the elements that NC State has, and I don't know how deep they went in the playbook, and it really doesn't matter to me. But I thought what Dave Dorn and his staff did last night was put this team on a stair step, if you will. And last night, the first step, training camp, second step, game one, third step, we're going to talk all week next week about a big game next Saturday at Mississippi State, because, Mark, that'll be the next proving point for this Wolfpack team.
Yeah, being able to do it on the road against this SEC team, I said in the middle of the summer, looking at their schedule, that was the date I circled where, hey, that is when we're going to find out the legitimacy of NC State football big picture. Coming off a big year, high expectations. I expect them to beat South Florida. They did. They did everything they were supposed to do last night. The thing that I liked about NC State last night, three penalties, eight of 13 on third down. Those are the kind of things. Move the chains. Do you play a clean game? For the most part, other than one interception, that was it. So I think there were a lot of the little things that Dave likes to talk about. That is physicality at the point of attack. Thought the defense attacked, the offensive line dominated up front. Dave Dorn will roll out of bed today and go, you know what, that's what I was looking for. But now, that is rearview mirror. Mississippi State up next for the Pack.
Yeah. Coach Dorn was kind enough to give the Huddle guys a little post game last night. He visited with Jordan Cornette, Eric McClain, E.J. Manuel, and Coach Richt.
Really proud of them. Man, it's hard to get a shutout in college football. So for defensive coaches and players, and offensively, it's great to get a bunch of guys in the game. And I really loved how we ran the football. We were really physical up front, you know, expected that. But to see how the backs played too, you know, and almost have 300 yards rushing, would have been perfect if we could have got that tonight.
Yeah.
How about that trench warfare up front, Coach? Come on. I mean, the big uglies moving guys out of the way. I mean, you have some very talented running backs, but those guys just moving the pile.
I love those guys. You know, we're going to have to go to Walmart and get a bunch of syrup
tonight.
Right.
Come on.
Out in the morning. Even the running backs got in on it. I don't know if you saw Jordan Houston's block down here at the end. That was awesome.
Hey, Coach, is it my imagination, or are you running the stretch more than you had in the past? I mean,
we're running
it so beautifully tonight.
Yeah, we did. We ran a lot of it with all the stuff they were doing on defense, you know, just to collect everything.
It all, yeah. Good job.
Yeah, that's a good play for us.
Yeah, Coach, I was most impressed with 3 penalties for 25 yards in the first game of the season. That's rare. And you talk about the experience of your team, all these guys being older guys. Talk about that a little bit and how you've kind of stressed that throughout the fall camp.
Well, it started in January. Our first team meeting of the winter, I did a presentation on our 109 penalties from last year. And it carried over. And we had officials at every practice in the spring, officials at every practice in fall. And just made a huge emphasis on how we can't beat us if we want to be the best team we can be. And the guys have bought into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talked about your linebackers when we were here with you a month ago. And seeing those guys just shine on a bright, bright stage and having all these fans back. Isaiah Moore, to me, is the alpha.
Yeah.
He's calling everything. He's setting everything. Just his energy from, you know, 40 yards away is contagious. Yeah. What does that guy bring to this team?
Well, he is. I mean, everybody listens to him. They respect him on and off the field. He's fast. He's tough. He's got it all, man. And the way Drake plays next, Drake Thomas, I thought, had a heck of a game tonight, too.
Yep.
You know, and then we got a good rotation in there. Peyton played some, and then we got Jalen Scott in the game. So it's a good crew.
Now, Coach, are you going to talk to Devin Leary about maybe sliding or something like that? It was a few times.
Rick talked
about freaking out, Coach. We needed to play the whole season.
I was freaking out. I was like,
make sure you let him know, hey.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, man, take care of yourself. You have 35 points.
They all
points,
play
but
with an edge, even their quarterback.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but not, not him.
Hey, he's Coach. Yeah. When I used to do my coach's show, we had a segment where my wife would say, Coach, what are you thinking? And that was one of those deals like, oh, my gosh, it could have been horrible.
Yeah, that would have been really bad. But, you know, came out of it good.
No, it came out great.
Right. Coach, when I think about what you guys did last year, historic season, and there's so much buzz now about what this program can do, how do you manage that? Do you ever draw upon last year, or is it only looking forward with this team?
No, we do. We use the past as a lesson to learn from. In my pregame talk today, I talked about the last 2 years, you know, and all the things we've been through. Because a lot of these guys were a part of what happened 2 years ago when it was really bad, you know. And so we've learned a lot through the thing. And like I told them, it made us stronger. It made us who we are as a team. And you can't take that for granted.
You look like a contender, Coach.
Yeah.
You really
that's
do.
One game. I appreciate you saying
that. No, I know, but you do.
That's one game. Yeah.
No, I really believe you do.
Thank you.
Hey, Coach. I know you're busy. I got the syrup. I'm just waiting for the delivery from Coach because we can always use pancakes on game day. I'm just telling you. Listen, it was a perfect start for NC State. It really was. It's exactly what you wanted. And, of course, the guys were giving Coach a hard time about Leary driving in there late, midway through the fourth quarter, trying to dive through there. Hey, you got to stay safe, man. We got 11 more of those bad boys ahead. So, but a really good start for NC State.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think the other part about this, remember the conversation we had yesterday where, and he just reemphasized it with the guys last night, the pre- and post-snap penalties, how that was a point of emphasis in the spring and certainly in the fall. Here's the other aspect about this, Mark. You look last night, 3 penalties, 25 yards. That's a crazy number when you think about it in a first game. Remember where we ran that stat earlier this week about teams with 7, 8, 9, sometimes double figures of penalties, and then you had 2 or 3 turnovers and teams find themselves in trouble? Hello, Tulsa this morning. Hello, some other folks this morning. I mean, UNLV, that's how you find yourself in trouble in a game. That's a huge credit to NC State and really shows a lot of maturity in my mind about where they are as a football team.
Well, you heard Coach drop the number 109. You go from 109 penalties last year. Dave Dorn would sign up for 3 for 25 right now every week. If we're only going to have 3, you can live with 3. But again, I thought NC State dominated both sides of the line of scrimmage. Coach loves the physicality. He likes his guys up front on both sides. Great linebacker core. Again, when you pitch a shutout, You have the balance of 232 yards passing, 293 on the ground. Hey, you move on to the next one. So good night for the Wolfpack.
Hard to script it any better, isn't it?
That's what I said. I guarantee a coach. Now, they'll find 1,000 things they got to improve on technique-wise and all that stuff. But the quality of the opposition gets much tougher next week. And you have to do it on the road. That's why I thought the calendar September the 11th for NC State on the road at Mississippi State. And a completely different attack. I mean, Mike Leach is going to, use the middle of the field. They're going to throw it out 8,000 times. So, again, NC State gets a little bonus time to get ready. But if you're a Wolfpack fan this morning, life is good.
Yeah, no doubt about it. News and notes from the ACC. Something that came down yesterday afternoon, about an hour and a half or 2 hours before kick last night, was the announcement by the Atlantic Coast Conference about some enhancements within the football officiating program. Now, some of that is on-field, some of it is off-field. The on-field elements that fans will probably notice more is that video review now is going to involve a tablet. The referee will have a tablet on the sideline. It just won't be the headset talking to the replay official on site, as well as communication with Greensboro. So that'll allow for more active participation. That's the hope of Dennis Hennigan, the supervisor of football officials, and also Michael Strickland, who is the associate commissioner for football in the ACC. Complete access to instant replay video will certainly be new. Referee can better administer the review with the assistance of the replay official and the communicator in the stadium and the collaborative group in Greensboro, as we talked about. Mark, this comes actually within like 72 hours of Justin Fuente talking about physical play in the Carolina-Virginia Tech game last year. So the sequencing might be a little awkward, but at the same time, I like the technology. It's something that some leagues tried last year. Certainly the NFL has gone to a more expansive piece of this. Let's hope it expedites the review process. That's where I would hope we get a leg up there.
You and I disagree on this one. I am not an instant when there's one sport that I know of that instant replay works, and that's tennis. And the reason it works is if you and I are playing against each other, you think it's in, I think it's out. Within 3 seconds, we have an answer, and the game moves on. That is, and when we can figure that out for football and basketball and baseball and field hockey or whatever sport you're in the mood, I'm all for it. If this helps, great. But as a fan, and this is not an ACC thing, this is a sport thing. As a fan, there is nothing more irritating than watching a great game and the flow comes to a screeching halt because you got dudes with headsets, we got dudes with tablets, we got people at a command center, and 7 minutes later, we still don't have a call. It drives me crazy. So if you think a tablet works, try it. But until we can get to tennis and figure it out, hey, I think he caught it. No, I don't think he did. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Incomplete. Second down. Let's go. That's what I'd love to see. If we could get to that, I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Well, there you go. That's the on-field note for folks. The off-field note that actually is an on-field note. The ACC is going to have its first female football official. Karina Tover joins the ACC from Conference USA. She's been an official in Conference USA the last 2 years. Native of California, she comes to the conference as the league's first ACC on-field official female. The ACC, by the way, will have better than 1,500 total seasons of football experience this year in its officiating crew, 622 seasons in the conference. The average experience level now is up to 9 years and 20 seasons overall among football officials in the Atlantic Coast Conference. So there we go. That's the opening night notes, if you will, on the back of a very impressive win by the Wolfpack. Coming up on the show today, we go to Andy Bitter in Blacksburg. You may have heard North Carolina Virginia Tech play tonight at 6 o'clock. Kurt Weiler will join us. We get a look ahead to Sunday night with Florida State Notre Dame. Ian Fitzsimmons joins us, Pack. He'll be in Charlotte tomorrow night for ESPN radio coverage of Georgia and Clemson. And the former Tar Heel linebacker Brian Simmons is on this show today. We get a pretty clean look ahead at the Tar Heels and Hokies tonight from his vantage point as they meet in Blacksburg at 6 o'clock Eastern time. Pretty good show on a Friday, I'd say, to get us ready.
Yeah, obviously we've got North Carolina, Virginia Tech conference game. But you know what? Duke, Wake Forest, cranking it up. It's going to be outstanding. Again, five consecutive nights of college football. And the Wolfpack started in fine fashion last night. And we mentioned already one little slight upset. My buddy Dan Hawkins out there at UC Davis, an old football championship subdivision team, beating one of the big boys from the FBS in Tulsa. So it's college football. There's no telling what's going to happen, especially week one with all the unknowns. But ACC gets it cranked up again with three tonight. Can't wait to watch it.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Game day again. Game day every day. Been waiting on it. We got three in the ACC going tonight. Obviously, North Carolina and Virginia Tech is a big deal with the conference. But, Wes, guess what? We got some non-conference affairs taking place. One right here in my backyard when the Blue Devils come here, as our man Robin says, the mighty Duke Blue Devils come rolling into the Queen City. And the folks up there in Switzerland, they got ODU coming in there. So we got a couple games to talk about up and above North Carolina and Virginia Tech.
All right, Pack, let's start in Charlotte, right? Because here's David Cutcliffe taking the Blue Devils down 85 to the Harris Boulevard exit, and they'll walk right into Richardson Stadium tonight to see one of the best young coaches in the country, Will Healy, and the 49ers of Charlotte. Mark, I wonder when we start looking at Duke tonight, do we have to do the quasi-exam of kind of the way Gunnar Holmberg looks, Mateo Durant? You know, how do we want to look at Duke tonight just as a football team, trying to come back from what a disappointing season last year was for him?
Well, you don't have to sell me on Durant. I think he's one of the best backs in the league, so that's a given. Mm-hmm. But quarterback play, I mean, we've got 14 teams in the league. We knew the 13 guys and who's going to be at the quarterback situation, even though Mike Norvell's still got the fake left go right going on, which we'll get to later. But you want to see how your quarterback plays. And here's the thing I want to see from Duke. Much like NC State yesterday and Dave Dorn talking about, I want a clean game, low in penalties, zero in turnovers, great defense. Here's what I'm going to see from Duke, Wes. Hold on to the ball. Last year, 39 turnovers. The worst on the planet Earth was Duke football last year, turning it over. You take it on the road, you should have a better football team. So hold on to the ball. The one thing you don't want to see as a Duke fan is, hey, man, we got the win, but, man, we turned it over five times. That has got to get cleaned up. In the first week, you hear every coach talk about, man, first week, I just want a clean game. Nobody wants that more than David Cutcliffe after what they saw last year leading the country in turnover. So that's what I want to see. Solid quarterback play and hold on to the ball, period.
Well, you see FPI's got Duke at a 64% chance to win the ball game. Kind of the details tonight, you want to watch Duke's offensive line. We've been talking a lot about how that's kind of been refurbished a little bit this year. Let's see what Jeff Ferris has got from an offensive perspective, some of the combinations they might use personnel-wise, particularly in the throw game. Remember, they've had great tight end play the last handful of years. You know they got some talent on the perimeter. Beyond Mateo Durant, how comfortable can Gunnar Holmberg get in week one? The other aspect about this, they lost Chris Rump. They lost Victor DiMucchese on the defensive side of the ball, Pack. How does some of those next veterans step up? I'm thinking about guys like, Leonard Johnson. I mean, they got guys, Shaka Hayward. They're going to have some veteran guys kind of set a tone on that side of the ball. Will Healy is slowly but surely building a program at Charlotte. Duke should win this game. But there are some moments tonight where I think the Blue Devils will probably be tested quite a bit by what Charlotte's doing. I know they've done a good job trying to find their groove in recruiting in that league. It'll be interesting to see how Duke handles a road environment, some of the demons of a year ago, and now Gunnar Holmberg's administration at quarterback, I think.
Well, I think Duke's got a better team than Charlotte. Doesn't mean you win the game. Especially does it when you turn it over. I mean, you can't have one of those nights where, hey, here we are again, Keystone Kop kicking that thing all over the yard, some short fields, easy scores. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, the locals are fired up. Hey, they're hosting an ACC team tonight. Charlotte, kind of a brand spanking new program. Will is a great guy, terrific coach, and they're excited about Duke coming to their house, the Queen City. We just had East Carolina and Appalachian State in my backyard last night. You got Duke coming to town tonight. And oh, by the way, this Clemson-Georgia thing tomorrow. So, I mean, it's been an amazing 3 days here in the Queen City of football. But for Duke, again, play smart, play clean. You got better personnel. Now go prove it. It's really that simple. Durant, I'm not worried about. You mentioned the losses of some key components from last year on the defensive front. Not sure you replace those guys instantly because those were some serious talent. But Duke, again, you know, they've got enough players to get off to a good start. And that's the thing for Duke. Man, you look at that schedule, 4 non-conference games in the month of September, a chance to kind of set the tone before you jump in the deep end of the pool with the ACC play. But if you're the Blue Devils, you got to win this game tonight.
Well, tonight in Winston-Salem, Dave Clawson and Wake Forest, who are getting a little bit of a vibe, have some energy on their campus. Big pep rally last night on the quad at Wake Chapel, lit up in gold. 7 o'clock Eastern time tonight on ACC Network. Drew Carter makes his debut on our network with Forrest Conley, the former Seminole, and Abby Labar on our coverage here on ACC Network. And we're going to watch the Deacon team. Pac, you know, you've always used the term the Swiss. That might be the perfect description here because everybody's kind of, you know, hey, Wake Forest, they're always there. They're a pretty good football team. I'm going to be really interested to watch Sam Hartman. I'll be interested to watch Christian Beal-Smith. Defensively, they've got some pieces here. Here comes Old Dominion, but now Wake Forest has got a chance here to kind of deliver the early note, right? Deliver the early message about where they might be as a football team.
You know why it's the Swiss, Wes? I can tell you that because I get that question. Like, Pac, why do you call Wake Forest Switzerland? Because everybody likes the Deacs. They have no enemies. They don't even have enemies within their own backyard because the Winston-Salem State Red Sea of Sound is going to join the Deacon Band tonight. They're bringing everybody together. That's what you do in Switzerland.
That's it.
There are no enemies. So, yeah, Old Dominion's coming to town. Dave Clawson, 6-1 in home openers. He is a tremendous coach. I will go back to say, again, I think the Deacs get off to a quick start. They can score a ton of points. They've been consistently good on the offensive side of the ball. They got a ton of starters back. And I will circle the date again, September the 18th, when Florida State makes the trip to Winston-Salem. And that, to me, is kind of like NC State's game next week with Mississippi State. We find out kind of where you are. But I expect Wake Forest to get off to a quick start, take care of business. And again, Dave Clawson, the perfect fit for the Demon Deacs.
All right, we're going to watch Ja'Cory Roberson tonight, too, because he ended last year 4 straight 100-yard receiving games. No Deacon ever has had 5 in a row, Pack.
That's possible tonight, I think, because I think Sam Hartman and the boys are going to score a lot of points. Hey, listen, they've been doing this now for years and years and years. And again, one of the best bar bets before the season is when we told you there's only 3 teams in the ACC that have been to a bowl in each of the last 5 years. You'd guess Clemson, you'd get probably get Miami. But how many folks would say, oh, yeah, the Swiss, Wake Forest? So yeah. Dave's got it going on. They got a chance to get off to a blistering start. Keep an eye on Wake Forest early.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. I think I disturbed Chester. He's gonna be.
How you doing?
Yeah, we're good.
You all right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I accidentally knocked over the commemorative coin that we got yesterday for North Carolina Virginia Tech with Commissioner Phillips with the signature on the back. Pretty nice. By the way, I found the other one they gave us from 2 years ago, but there's no John Swofford. There was no John Swofford signature on the back of that one. So Commissioner Phillips already upgrading the commemorative coin business in the ACC, which is good. But tonight, no joke tonight, though, Wes, it will be hopping at Lane Stadium at 6 p.m. tonight.
Wow. Let me tell you now, in terms of environments, kids, you need to be kind of locked in tonight right around 6 o'clock on ESPN to see Enter Sandman. Andy Bitter joins us from the heart of Southwestern Virginia this morning. Good morning, Andrew. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. Counting down the hours until this thing can start here.
But, you know, we knew what the schedule looked like when it came out, and instantly you got the sense of, man, if we can get everybody back in the stadium, the fact that these two teams have played such crazy, wild whether it's six overtimes or first to 50. I mean, they have had some amazing games. Into the anticipation on this one on both sides. For North Carolina, the hype all season in terms of preseason top 10, this could be the year. And for Virginia Tech, that, hey, a chance to get Hokie Nation all back together at Lane Stadium and get this thing off to a good start with that crazy home schedule being so front-loaded. There is so much riding on this game tonight.
Yeah, this has been a really sneaky good matchup the last couple of years. The last 2 years, you can even go back 3 years ago where North Carolina fumbled on the goal line. Virginia Tech goes 98 yards to win the game. Those are bad teams, but it was a really good game. It came down to the wire like that. So, you look at the stakes for both teams. It's North Carolina. Is this team for real? There's been a lot of hype around this team in the offseason, top 10 ranking. Not a place that North Carolina finds it normally. So I think some people are questioning how legit that is. And then Virginia Tech, it's can Justin Fuente kind of cool the seat right now? And I think a win against North Carolina would do that considerably, where, you know, the opposite, a loss, and all of a sudden, whoa, you got West Virginia and Notre Dame in the first month of the season, you're already 0-1. That's a tall order right there. So I think there's a lot at stake for both of these teams.
Andy, you mentioned the schedule, and look, we can't look too far ahead, right? It just, the mechanics of it are really, really difficult for Virginia Tech. We know how hard the schedule is. Morgantown, you mentioned Notre Dame. I mean, there are all sorts of elements in here that face this particular Hokie team. But yet, we keep coming back to Virginia Tech's bounce back. What are the key things for you in them bouncing back? What do you need to see tonight that, you know, you can say, okay, after tonight, win or lose, I feel better about this team if?
I think mostly if the defense shows improvement. And I don't know exactly what improvement on the defense looks like, but it's got to be better than last year. Because certainly, you know, I know they played this game shorthanded against North Carolina last year defensively, but they offered no resistance whatsoever. And there were times last year where they just looked kind of clueless on that side of the ball. And that's not what you think of when you think of Hokies football at all. And, you know, you don't have Bud Foster there anymore. You're transitioning to Justin Hamilton as the defensive coordinator. But they just didn't look like they had a foundation of what they wanted to do or anything they could rely on that they could do from week to week. So they're going to have to sort of have that base that they can go to, that they can understand what they're good at on defense. And then offensively, I think they need to prove that they can continue to move the ball, even with a new running back, new quarterback, and without Christian Darrisaw on the offensive line. I think there are more pieces there to be able to do that, but you see them go out and do it on the field to sort of prove the concepts.
You know, Andy, it's interesting, given the ebbs and flows of Justin Fuente, and again, there's been some spikes both directions. One thing has remained pretty consistent, and that is Justin Fuente's offense has really done damage against North Carolina. Not only does he done a nice job winning 4 out of 5, but they've averaged over 40 a game. It's, you know, sometimes you just happen to be, you got somebody's number from that perspective. Do you get a sense that Virginia Tech might have North Carolina's number?
I know this is a game they get up for it. And I know a couple of years ago they won like 59-7 or something like that, which oddly was one of the worst offensive games they played against them. I think they scored two defensive touchdowns, had a special teams touchdown that one, and that really got out of hand. But I think this is a game that they get dialed in for, because I don't think they like North Carolina necessarily. And you get after Virginia and you're looking at rivals within the ACC. I think North Carolina, go up against them a lot in the recruiting trail. You know, it's a border state like that. There's going to be all sorts of carryover between the two states on the rosters. And I just think it's a team that, Cam Phillips, the wide receiver a couple of years ago, said that Justin Fuente enjoys beating North Carolina. And Fuente was not too happy that Cam Phillips revealed that little nugget, which must mean that it's true. So I just think there's a little bit of in this series, and maybe that's they dial it up a little bit on offense and are a little more honed in.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, Andy. I think Virginia Tech and Carolina has has gone up several notches, right, in the last few years. And it's interesting this stage tonight because of where Carolina is in the preseason, really for the first time since, what, 1998, I guess, 97. And you look at where Carolina is tonight, and yet we talk about Virginia Tech coming back. And I said this in talking with Roddy Jones in kind of preparation for the weekend the other day. Virginia Tech wins this game, we're going to go chaos right away in the Coastal. We're going to open the door to chaos right on opening night in that division. Has anybody talked about that aspect of it from the Hokie standpoint?
Not too much. That hasn't been the focus. I think when it's the season opener, people don't worry about that too much. I know it's true. I mean, obviously, if they win this game, that opens up all sorts of possibilities in the division, and it's against a team that's picked to win the whole thing. So, I think that's definitely true, but I don't hear too many people talking about that as motivation. I think the fact that it's the opener, the fact that it's Carolina, you look at what the result was last year, where Carolina really could have picked whatever score it wanted. The only thing that stopped them was drop passes last year. I think those are the things that are probably the biggest motivators for this game right now.
Andy, I want to go back to another number, because I just mentioned that, you know, sometimes guys have somebody else's number, right, with Justin Fuente and his success against North Carolina. Lane Stadium, right? We've talked about Enter Sandman, incredible, just awesome environment. Fans that love their football team. I'm married to one. But you know what? The Hokies are 1-11 against ranked teams at home since 2010. That is a startling number for a stadium and a fan base that's got such a great reputation as far as a difficult place to play. It quite frankly, when good teams have rolled in to Virginia Tech for the last decade plus, that has not been a problem. I mean, that trend has to change, doesn't it, if Virginia Tech wants to get back to where they expect to be?
Yeah, definitely. And you look at where the program has gone since 2010, that's sort of where the slide began. You know, after that 2011 season, I think they have one 10-win season since then. So I'm not going to put this on the fans of Lane Stadium not being raucous or a tough place to play. I think the team has just not been as good since then. But you're right. It's not – I mean, you think of all the great teams from 95 to 2010 and going into Virginia Tech and it's Corey Moore and welcome to the Terror Dome and all this stuff. Like, I think there was a fear factor of playing in Lane Stadium back then, and that's not there anymore. And, you know, I don't – you know, you're not going to have anybody as intense, as intimidating as Corey Moore on your sideline that's going to help that along. But by winning some of these games again, I think maybe you can get back a little bit towards that intimidation factor and making Lane a tough place to play.
All right, Andy, I've held off all season asking this. I think tonight, though, we probably at least ought to consider this. John Tenuta was brought on by Justin Fuente as a senior defensive analyst in the offseason. His son is an offensive lineman who's a talented, talented guy. But Tenuta's defensive history at a variety of schools in this league, for starters, is based on blitzing. How much influence do you think Tenuta has brought to what Justin Hamilton wants to do defensively, and how much do you think we got a chance to see tonight?
You know, it's tough to say. We only talked to him once, and that was in, like, February or something like that, shortly after he had come on. I think really what he's there for is just to be that sort of veteran presence in the room. It's a very young defensive coaching staff. It's a lot of guys that have not been doing it for very long. Obviously, Justin Hamilton, this is his second year as a coordinator. So I think more than anything in terms of his influence is just to be that the old guy in the room that's seen it all, that's done it all, that's been, you know, nothing is new to him at this point of his career. So I think schematically it's probably not too much of an impact there, although maybe he could offer some things here and there. I think Justin Hamilton's going to be somebody who blitzes anyway. And then, I mean, he was from that Bud Foster cloth. I mean, that's sort of what Bud's MO was for a long time, was bringing lots of pressures. But I think Tenuta's big role on this team is just to sort of, you know, another set of eyes, veteran eyes on things that can see where things are maybe going awry or offer some advice here and there.
Andy, Virginia Tech wins this game if what happens tonight?
they've got to score more points.
No, don't give me that.
Oh, there you go.
No, wait. Don't give me my Justin Puente. All right, go ahead. Go ahead. I think I figured it out, but go ahead.
That's not easy to do against North Carolina. I mean, let's put it easy. This is, you can't let North Carolina get rolling offensively. And that means you can't let them get in a rhythm. You can't let them pace you. That you can't let them just completely have you discombobulated with their RPO game like it was last year. I mean, last year it was 21-0 before you could sit down in your seat. And at that point, the game is over. You're not catching North Carolina in a game like that. So you need to score some points. You need to score some points early. Because if you're playing from behind against this team, I feel like it's going to be really tough to catch up. And the Hokies did not give themselves that chance last year. So I think even 2 years ago in the six overtime game, it was 14-0 at some point. They came back in that game. It's just not you're living dangerously if you're playing North Carolina and you're trying to play catch up all the time.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, great stuff. Thanks as always for the time. Enjoy the environment tonight. It ought to be spectacular at Lane Stadium and the ball game 6 o'clock on ESPN. Always appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Andy.
You bet. Andy Bitter covers Virginia Tech for The Athletic, does a great job. And we'll hear from Brian Simmons, the Tar Heel linebacker, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. He'll be on the radio call tonight with Jones Angel. So looking forward to that, too.
You know, Wes, they've played such crazy games that you almost get a sense the anticipation. We've talked about this game for 4 months, right, in terms of when the season starts. Can you imagine Lane Stadium before we get to the Saturday showcase games and everything else? This one almost kind of feels like something crazy could happen, right? I mean, Virginia Tech is overdue for a major win at home. We gave you that number all week long, 1-11 against ranked teams. And North Carolina, you know, the fascination about, all right, man, are they a top 10 team? Are they even better than that? We know how great Sam Howell is, but the weapons have changed a little bit. The anticipation watching North Carolina defensively, where I think that's where they go from, hey, a really good team to maybe something special. That game's got a little bit of everything. And then, of course, you throw Virginia Tech football fans who are just salivating to get in there 66,000 strong and causing havoc. So it's got everything you want. And the cool thing, 6 p.m. your kick, right? That's the other thing you got to love. 6 p.m. your kick. So man, get that one all over you, as I like to say. Because it's going to be a good one.
I think this game, Georgia-Clemson is a different animal because Georgia-Clemson figures into the national hierarchy, okay? And remember one thing about the Bulldogs and Tigers tomorrow night in Uptown Charlotte. The loser is not out, okay? Carolina-Virginia Tech, Carolina loses tonight. It's a different temperament when you come to Carolina the rest of the year if Virginia Tech does not have an 8, 9, 10-win season. Beyond the walls of this league, and we talk about that a lot here, but beyond the walls of this league, Carolina's looked at differently unless Virginia Tech goes and has a year, right? Remember how good the Virginia Tech win at Columbus, Ohio was in that opening night a couple of years ago when Ohio State then went and ran the table. Remember how good that win was for the Hokies? Well, Carolina will need Virginia Tech to do that same type thing if Virginia Tech wins the game in Carolina to stay in the landscape. It also factors in this quick thought. Last night we saw NC State deliver a message, right? 45-0, we're here, this is what we look like. I know Jeff Scott's still building. Nonetheless, NC State played with a purpose last night. That's the other thing maybe we haven't talked enough about that deserves a re-mention here as we go into the weekend. We're going to want to see teams play with a purpose, whether it's Pitt tomorrow here against UMass, BC against Colgate, Georgia Tech, Northern Illinois, you name it, Duke tonight in Charlotte, Wake against Old Dominion. This league has got depth to it, but what kind of message are they going to deliver in week one? Tonight, Carolina and Virginia Tech are both looking to deliver a message. This is not just one game. It's like 1.5 or 2 in the standings. That brings another layer altogether of a game you can't find anywhere else in this league this weekend.
Well, it's a conference game, and it's a division game, and it's two teams that, quite frankly, they got respect for one another, but would really like to bury
them. They all like
right?
each other.
They want to bury each yep. other. So, like I said, as a fan sitting on the couch with one ice cube tonight at 6:01 p.m., I know exactly where I'm going to be. I'm going to be watching that game.
Yeah.
And it's got huge implications, and we'll talk about it a bunch on Monday.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, it is game day again in the ACC. 3 tonight and a bunch tomorrow, one on Sunday, one on Monday. Mm-hmm. What more do you want as a football fan?
Yep. It's exactly right. And one of the headlines tomorrow, of course, nationally, is Georgia, Clemson, and Charlotte. And in that ball game tomorrow night, Justin Foster on the Tigers' defensive line makes his return to the Clemson lineup. Foster missed all of last year as a result of the coronavirus and his acquisition of it and post-symptoms and all sorts of things that happened in the aftermath of the coronavirus. Investigative reporter TJ Quinn profiles Justin Foster's unique and incredible comeback.
Wrestled out. Justin Foster got there first.
He's tough, physical, conscientious.
Watch Foster start outside, come inside.
Power rusher, straight power rusher. He loves to go through the tackle, go through people.
He's one of the most respected guys on this team.
Burrow is pressured, cannot escape. Justin Foster.
In spring 2020, the Clemson Tigers set out to reclaim the national title they had just lost. Defensive end Justin Foster was getting ready to finish his college career and show he was ready for the NFL. And then COVID-19 changed everything.
Clemson Athletics announced Friday 28 individuals have tested positive for COVID-19.
When I got the text message from the training staff saying that I had tested positive, I was very surprised because I wasn't having many symptoms.
He had seen teammates test positive and return with no issues. But when his quarantine ended and he took the field, something wasn't right.
As the days went on, I couldn't finish the workout. I couldn't finish running. And then it got to the point where, you know, when the trainers did check my breathing and check my heart rate, they were like, okay, we need to cut it out.
I just remember him coming to me and he kind of was broken down. He said, Coach, I can't do it.
The entire team had no idea what was happening. Am I going to be next? Why did he react like that to COVID? And if I get COVID, am I going to react the same way?
Clearly, something was wrong, but numerous doctors couldn't figure out why.
It's like, am I crazy? Is something like going on with me mentally that I just can't push through this?
You know, he's one of those guys that if he comes and tells you there's something going on, you better believe it.
There was something going on. Like 30% of COVID patients, Foster had become a long hauler, someone who still had symptoms more than 4 weeks after being infected.
It can really destroy lives. COVID does not discriminate. It doesn't care if you're a prime athlete like Justin, or a couch potato, it can hit you hard. And we don't know what the long-term consequences are.
When did it start to occur to you that you might have to just put your career on pause for a while?
I would say middle of the season. I just told Coach Sweeney I don't feel that I'll be able to step back on the field or maybe even another year down the road. And I say, you know, I just don't feel that my body is gonna allow me to do that.
On February 24th this year, 8 months after being diagnosed with COVID, Foster announced he was walking away from the game.
I don't want to get my hopes up and keep hoping and hoping and hoping that I'm going to be back to normal.
A few weeks later, we checked in again.
Since we last spoke, what have you been up to?
When I got the vaccine, I actually started to feel better. You know, I'm not wheezing anymore through like daily activity.
Just finished working out at the YMCA in Bowling Springs, North Carolina. I feel like I'm getting better. I'm just gonna keep pushing through.
Foster was among the roughly 40% of long haulers who improved after getting vaccinated. He was also being treated at Duke University Hospital's post-COVID clinic.
When you look at the amount of air that he's able to blow out in 1 second, a few months ago, he was at 45%, and now he's at 102%. I'm encouraged by how he is looking today, that he can be back on that field.
I guess it's just kind of like turning the corner, and I'm starting to feel a lot better. I actually did get a call from Coach Sweeney as soon as I stepped out of Duke. I don't know if that was a sign or something.
On May 5th, Foster announced he was returning to football. He still struggles with long hauler symptoms, and he realizes he might always. But for now, being back on the field is enough.
It's almost like it's not real. I mean, most of the time, it's, you get one shot, one chance, and once it's done, it's done. I was just grateful that I'm able to step back out there and my health is getting better and I'll be able to compete.
Wes, I'll tell you, football or no football, it's just good to see Justin feeling better. And for somebody that just went through it in July, I get it. I mean, sometimes walking up a flight of stairs, you feel like you've gone through a marathon. But to see him back playing football again is a great story, and he is a big-time player. Just what Clemson needs, another defensive nightmare, right? I mean, they've got a ton of them.
Yeah, don't forget that TJ Quinpack has got more on Justin Foster. The video is almost like a companion piece to the article online at ESPN.com. It is going to be great to see him take the field tomorrow night for the Tigers, knowing his perseverance. And I'll go back and we saw the video sequences from Duke. Remember, Dr. Cam Wolf at Duke University is the chairman of the ACC's medical advisory group. So you know that if Justin Foster got his care there, that's the commitment this league has to find folks throughout the conference footprint, the member institutions. I'm here in Pittsburgh. We know what they've done at UPMC here, things of that nature. The collaborative effort to get these young people back on the field and attack this virus and find cleaner and clearer solutions is certainly the case in the ACC. And that's just a subset to the bigger piece of having Justin Foster back in the lineup, too.
Yeah, no question about that. But just great to see him feeling good again. And like I said, I can totally sympathize where he's coming from. Not that yeah. I'm an athlete, but you know what? You just, when you get hit with it, it can be tough. And again, we're still in this pandemic. Yeah. And I can't emphasize again, you go to stadiums this weekend or sometime this season, just be smart. We are still fighting the pandemic.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.